Good evening, my name is Eric, I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to those new counting days. You're in the right place. You know, it's the 10th month, and I know I'm going to be covering the last three steps to the best of my ability, but I also wanted to go to the 10th tradition on page 565. And it really ties into the promises of the 10th step. And it's amazing how the authors of our literature were far more visionary than they thought. And especially in a time in the world today and what's going on outside of these rooms. And it says, no AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous group oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. And I think about what it's like for me on the outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I come into the rooms of AA, how all my worldly titles are stripped away from me. And I'm really just another drunk. Right? It talks about we are people that normally would not mix. And what a gift. What a gift. And, you know, prayers and thoughts go out for those in Pittsburgh and all the things that are going on in this world today. And we have a safe place in Alcoholics Anonymous to come and recover. And, you know, I'm guilty. I'm guilty of putting a label on myself in this outside world. I'm guilty of having a political party and opposing another one and drawing a line. And it's us against them mentality. And that's the very thing that is killing us. And it's the very thing that sparked my alcoholism, really. Us against them. Mm. You know, and when we're in here, that mentality goes out the window. Thank God. Because we're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not us against them. We're all together. And the only thing that can win out is love and unity. And we're living in difficult times. And thank God for AA. You know. And so we're going to start on page 84. And I'll try to get to as much of it as I can with the reading. Says, this thought brings us to step 10. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So this is, to me, this is telling me that, you know, as I was doing my fourth step, my sponsor, my inventory, he had me reading 84 to 88 every day. So I was commencing to live this way of life as I was cleaning up my past in 4 and 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, right, as I was going through this process. So, in fact, I was at step 10 when I was at step 4. Mm. You know, and in a nutshell, for me, the steps are broken down very simply. You know, the first three steps, I can, he can, I think, I'll let him. 4 and 5 is about me and what makes me tick and why I need to put poison in my body to live. I take that information to God in 6 and 7, and then in 8 and 9 I play nice with others. And I do that all over again in 10, 11, and 12. 10, I continue to take my personal inventory. I take that information to God in step 11 to clear a channel so I can be of service to help others. And it's quite simple, but you know, I have a complicated mind sometimes. So I vigorously commenced this way of living as I cleaned up the past. I entered the world of the spirit. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And, you know, when I do that us against them mentality, I lose my effectiveness. And I have to watch for certain things, right? It says this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So it's going to tell me what I need to watch for on a daily basis. So it says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it doesn't say if these things crop up. It says when these things crop up, which means just because I have some time in recovery doesn't mean that these things don't crop up, right? And then it gives me some solid instructions on what to do when these things crop up, right? says, when these things crop up, I ask God at once, not wait, not maybe later I'll ask God for it, but at once, to remove them. I discuss them with another person immediately, right? At once, immediately. And I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is my code. And so I continue to watch for these things. And, you know, I've been so entangled in social media. And it's been killing my spiritual condition. And it's this environment that we're in, and I'm feeding into it, and so I'm taking inventory on it, and I recently just made an amends on social media for some of my comments and some of my rhetoric that really doesn't show my values of love and tolerance, and I just did that in the parking lot. Because it's consuming me, and I have this justification about it, that I have a family now, I pay taxes, so why wouldn't I pay attention to all this political stuff, right? And it's just a rationalization. It's a way to feed my ego, and it's an us-against-them mentality. And so it's fear, you know, so I'm afraid. It comes down to that, and I'm selfish, and I'm resentful, you know, and... I got a really good life today, and I am what I pay attention to. And sometimes I can miss the mark, and I can pay attention to the wrong things. And when I was a bachelor living with grandma, and I can go to a billion meetings a day, and I can help out all these alcoholics, and I have any responsibility, it was easy to be peaceful, right? You know. And then I got engaged. I have a house. I have a fiance who lives in that house with me, and now three children. Recently, we added a third one on the 13th of October, and you know, she just doesn't do things the way I do things. And
the baby?
No. I'm organized. I like to be neat. She seems to still live in a college dorm. I step in dog pee. There's a diaper over here on the floor. There's clothes over there. And here I am, you know. Thank God for step 10. You know, and Chuck Chamberlain talks about his transformation through the process of recovery. And he talked about his family life, and he talked about sitting in that chair, married to that woman, with those kids, at that job, a miserable SOB. And he talked about his transformation through the 12 steps, and he would talk about sitting in the same chair, married to the same woman, at the same job, the same kids, with tears of joy running down his face, wondering how life can get any better. And that's what it is for me, is perception. So I was having issues with this, and I'm paying all the bills on top of it. She's not working. I'm you know, making all the money, and I'm coming home to a dirty house, and and so I'm carrying around resentment. And I'm praying for it. I'm talking to my sponsor about it, and you know, when you live with somebody, they continue to crop up. It doesn't seem to go away completely. And because I have like this magnifying mind, I just focus on all these negative things, and sometimes I forget. And so it was the first Christmas in our house, and she wanted a real tree, and I wanted a fake tree, and she won. And at the time, it was me, my 14-year-old daughter, who comes every once in a while to hang out with us, and my fiance, my stepdaughter, and this was even before our 14-month-old had come into the picture. And I remember going out and finding a tree, and we're all doing this together, and we put it on the top of the car, and I begrudgingly drag it into the house, and I'm annoyed, and I abruptly put it on the stand, and and I turned on the Christmas music in the background on the TV, and you know, I just figured I'll take video, and I took a step back with my phone, and I was taking video, and I had a Chuck C moment. In that moment in time, all those little petty resentments, everything that I thought was so wrong, for the moment, disappeared. Mm-hmm. It melted, and God has a way of showing me what's really important. I got to see what God had given me, and often I forget what God gives me, and I'm selfish and self-centered, and I think there should be more, right? But I have everything I need, so I got to see my family, in our house for the first Christmas, decorating the Christmas tree with my daughter and stepdaughter and fiance, and I had a Chuck C moment. And it's not that those resentments haven't crept that back into my vision. They don't seem to ever completely go away. But that's how I know I'm human. And I thank God for my character defects or my shortcomings, because if I were perfect, which I strive for, I would have no need for my Creator. Mm. It's really my imperfections that keep driving me to a relationship with God. You know, and that brings us to the next paragraph. It says, "And we had ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned." And these are the 10-step promises, by the way, for those of you who are new. You got to get to the 10-step before you can have this stuff, right? "We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is a miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality." And that position of neutrality ties into the 10th tradition. You know, when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm placed in a position of neutrality. Mm-hmm. All the outside garbage doesn't matter in this hour, in this moment. And safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. That's a great promise. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is how our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And part of my spiritual condition is continuing to take personal inventory. That's part of it. An honest self-appraisal. And that's why it talks about asking God first and then talking to somebody else about it. Because as I mentioned last week, sponsorship is a gift. And my sponsor is not emotionally attached to my life whatsoever. And my sponsor has the ability to see things that I often can't see because I'm blinded by my own life. Right? And I'm so emotionally entangled into the things that go on in my life on a day-to-day basis that sometimes I miss the point. And so sponsorship is important for that reason. It says it is easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our will along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Thy will, not mine, be done. Right? And I got to carry God's will into all my activities, which I fall very short from. And I have a daily reprieve. And yeah, there is no cure for the physical part of my alcoholism. Absolutely not. But what I have had is the obsession to drink has been removed. If I were to take a drink today, all bets would be off. That obsession would come right back. Right? And there's a story in here in the big book about the man of The businessman of 24 years or 25 years who remains bone dry, who wanted to have a successful business career before he would have another drop. And upon retirement, comes out bottle and carpet slippers, and within 4 years, he's dead. All the money in the world that he had that can solve his alcoholism, but yet he couldn't get over it, right? So time does not absolve me from alcoholism, and the physical aspect of my dis-ease. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. So in order for me to have a spiritual experience, I must take spiritual actions. And for those of you who are new, for me, in the beginning, I did a lot of things I didn't believe in. But I did them anyway because I was pretty badly mangled by my alcoholism. So I continue to take spiritual action. And I got to tell you, if I would have made a list of what my life would look like today, 9 years ago, mm-hmm. I'd have sold myself short. I didn't have the ability to think that I would be able to take care of a family, provide for a family, and even have a family 9 years ago. Anything is possible. Anything. And this brings us to step 11, prayer and meditation, which is a huge, huge, huge component of my recovery. It's that constant contact with my Creator, because without it, I get consumed with self and creation, you know, and the material world. And the things I think I need are important when I forget I have everything I need and I live in abundance, you know. And I've always lived in abundance. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And this is my nightly inventory, right? So really the 10-step inventory is on the spot, right? I could do a 10-step anytime during the day. I don't wait until nighttime to do this because there's some directions in here that say at once and immediately, right? Doesn't say wait till nighttime to take this inventory. But this, on the other hand, is when I drop to my knees at night, I ask myself these questions, right? So when I retire at night, I constructively review my day. Where had I been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Was I kind and loving toward all? What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And, yeah, I'm an extremist, right? So there's a warning here for me not to beat myself up too much. Because self-pity is just another, it's pride in reverse, is what it is. And oh, poor me, and I don't do anything right, and so I need to be somewhere in the middle, you know. Either I was way up here, an egomaniac, putting everybody down, or I was dirt beneath your feet, and I didn't really deserve to live. And these extreme emotional booby traps are things that I need to kind of sidestep. And so when I take my inventory, when I answer these questions, it reminds me that it's not, that inventory is not always done in red ink. And there's a lot of things I do throughout the day that are good. And then I ask God for forgiveness, and I inquire for the corrective measures that should be taken, and I'm supposed to move on. You know, sometimes I drag yesterday's baggage into today, and what happens for me is that continues to pile up, where life then becomes a burden again. And And I got to be rid of these negative emotions. And it's my understanding that for me, God loves me the way I am. God loves me with all my imperfections. And if He didn't, I wouldn't be sitting here a sober man today. You know? And so I have to remember that. And I also remember my identity is not of this world. My identity is I'm a child of God. Right? I'm here. I'm an alcoholic to identify that I have the drinking problem. But the truth is, if I go even dig down deeper, for me, I'm a child of God. And you know, and it talks about the reason why self-pity is disruptful for me is because it kills my effectiveness once again to be of use to other people. You know, this is AA is not a self-help program. AA is a help others program, right? So I'm not coming in here. In the beginning, yes, it was all about me and I need help and but over time as I go through this process, I'm here to look to help other people. You know, and give. Give what has so freely been given to me. And so as I take this inventory and I look at my day, can have gratitude. I'm even thankful for the things I don't do well. You know, I had to make many apologies. In fact, I made an amends to my fiance after the day after Christmas with all my attitude and things of that nature. And you know, recently, our son was born on the 13th of October, and I remember these resentments coming back again. And I was involved. I was in fear, and I'm thinking we have a 3-bedroom house. We have now myself, my fiance, and 3 children. So we're missing a bedroom, and so I was frantically trying to try and buy another house or refinance. And here I am again. I'm running the show, you know, because I'm afraid. I'm afraid of a what if. We don't have enough room for this other child. It turns out he's another boy, so they can share a room, right? That all took care of itself. But at the time, it wasn't looking that way, right? I had no idea if it was going to be a girl or a boy. And I was consumed on the phone with banks and emails. And I remember it was going to be her second doctor's appointment to go to the clinic and check on the baby to make sure that everything was good, and I drove her to the doctor's appointment, and in the meantime, my phone email is going off and it's blowing up, we're waiting in the waiting room, and I'm just on my phone, right? I'm trying to do a refinance now at this point because I can't find another house, and I think I need some money to maybe redo the basement, and all this stuff, mm-hmm. right? All this stuff, and we got called into the room, and the lady came in with the sonogram machine, right, to check the baby, and we were going to hear the heartbeat for the first time, and my phone went off. It was the bank, and I stepped out of the room, went into the hallway, and I completely missed that moment. Mm. And I remember driving back from that doctor's appointment and my fiance looking at me and saying, "You don't even seem excited that we're having another child." And once again, I had to make an amends. Everything fell into place. Refinance went through. I had some people come over to change rooms. The little girl's going in the smaller room. The 2 boys are going in the bigger room. And it all worked out. How about that? I didn't need to fix manage control. Right? And it's, again, I'm watching for these things because they do crop up. And so what a gift. And, you know, so then in the morning, it talks about on awakening. So what I do in the morning is I drop to my knees, as I usually do. I say some prayers and meditation, and I think about this paragraph. And it says, "On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave me brains to use. My thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And notice the theme, right? The theme in this, I'm looking for these things all the time. Self-seeking, dishonest, resentment. And at this point in the morning, I'm asking God to divorce my thinking from that. And once again, it's so I can be of use and benefit towards alcoholics and my family and those who I come in contact with. Because if I'm wrapped up in these dishonest, self-seeking motives, I can't be of real use or maximum benefit to others. And so that's the theme, right? That's the theme. It's about helping others. And it's about giving. And there's a pretty good... one of my Sunday morning rituals. The gentleman was giving a pretty good analogy about the gift of giving. And he used... He used the Sea of Galilee, the springs of life, the River of Jordan, and he talked about the ability to give and also receive. And he talked about these bodies of water, and he talked about the Sea of Galilee, which it receives and it gives to the Jordan River, and it's abundant with life. It's just bursting with life. It receives and it gives. It receives and it gives. And he said, but there's another body of water that's below sea level. And all that body of water does is take. It doesn't give to any other body of water. And that sea is known as the Dead Sea, where there is no life. And my alcoholism and in my defect of character and shortcoming, I was that body of water. You see, I don't give because I'm afraid that I don't have enough. I don't give because I'm afraid I'm going to run out. Therefore, I don't have trust and reliance upon God. Right? And for me, without trust and reliance upon God, I can't really have peace and serenity. Today, I'm bursting with life. Even in the midst of my struggles, I can still have peace. Regardless of the circumstances of life, I can still have peace. So on awakening, I ask God to divorce my thinking from anything that can really stand in the way of my usefulness to my family and others around me. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision, absolutely. May not be able to determine which course to take. Here I ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. And whenever I skip that part and I just dive into something without asking God for an intuitive thought, I seem to make a mess out of it, right? So really, it teaches me to pause and have reliance, right? I relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. I'm often surprised how the right answer comes after I have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that I am going to be inspired at all times. I might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, I find that my thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. I come to rely upon it. And yeah, they talk about working the steps, right? Work, 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 work. And the truth is, after a period of time, I no longer work the steps. I live the steps. I become the steps, the principles in the steps. And part of this need to feel good all the time, right? It says in How It Works, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Well, one of the major old ideas I had that drove my alcoholism and my addiction was I thought I needed to feel good all the time, right? Therefore, I sought oblivion, right? Because I couldn't deal with life, because life doesn't always make me feel good, right? And that's an old idea I had to put out of my mind. The truth is, sometimes it's simply okay not to be okay. And what my alcoholism tells me is that when I'm going through a difficult period of time, especially before coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and applying spiritual principles, my disease, dis-ease, tells me that the way I'm feeling now is the way I'm going to feel for the rest of my life. Right? I'm always going to feel self-pity, and I'm always going to feel this ick. And the truth is, feelings come and feelings go, right? They pass. And I wasn't aware of that. I never gave my feelings a chance to pass because that was so uncomfortable, but I knew how to fix that. Take another drink or something else or whatever was in front of me. It didn't really matter, right? So it says, I usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that I be shown all through the day what my next step is to be, that I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. I ask especially for freedom from self-will, and I'm careful to make no requests for myself only. I may ask for myself, however, if others will be helped. I am careful never to pray for my own selfish ends. I have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. I can easily see why, right? So that I begin to see why upon inventory. It says, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. And here's a good one for my so-called atheism, right? Mm-hmm. Bill says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. And part of my resentment against organized religion, it's amazing. And I probably shared this throughout the past 3 weeks, but every Tuesday night I go to a meeting in Summit at 5:30, and when we get out of our meeting, there's a ton of people in the foyer of that church. It's Christ Church, and there's tables lined up with food and vegetables and all this stuff, and there's volunteers handing out food to people who can't afford to feed themselves. Well, I guess that would be where religious people are right. Right? In my prejudice, in my clouded vision of reality, and because it really was an ego-feeding proposition, I failed to see anything good about organized religion. I never saw that about organized religion, right? They help a lot of people. Mm. You know? I've become a religious person myself. Never thought that would happen. Not only did I see where they were right and what they have to offer, now I want to offer just like them. I want to be selfless, and I want to give as much as I can, right? And what a gift, right? It says, as we go through the day, and just more instruction, right? This is a design for living. At this point, alcohol is out of the equation. You know, the only step that talks about alcohol is step one. That's the only step. What this is a design for living, so that I'm placed in a position of neutrality, and that the problem is removed. I honestly can tell you that I haven't had a serious thought of a drink or a drug since October of 2009. I haven't. I'm also very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have a sponsor. I still sponsor guys, and I still make 7 to 10 meetings a week sometimes, even with everything else that goes on in my life. You know, because God in AA comes first, mm-hmm. right? So it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. Ask for the right thought or action. Once again, I'm asking for help. I constantly remind myself I am no longer running the show. Humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. I am then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. I become much more efficient. I do not tire so easily for I am not burning up energy foolishly as I did when I was trying to arrange life to suit myself. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And so this is really cleaning me up. And numerous times in what we just read, it talks about why I'm cleaning up, right? Why I'm taking inventory. So I can be better available to do step 12. Right? Because it's tough if I'm in self-pity, resentment, and I'm in this constant turmoil in my own life. It sometimes gets in the way of my usefulness to others. But also, it can also sometimes be a benefit, because when I go through a struggle and I make through a certain struggle or indecision in a sober manner, I now have some experience to share with somebody who might be coming behind me who might have the same struggle, right? But really, for me, the 12th step is just one purpose. I have one purpose as a sponsor, and that's to guide somebody through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? I'm not your banker. I'm not your taxi cab. I'm not your relationship specialist or your psychologist or psychiatrist. All we do is we sit down, we read, and I take direction and do what it says in the book. And it's an amazing gift. You know, and I'm going to read a little bit of this, but I'm probably not going to get through all of it. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Just like me, right? And the doctor's opinion talks about frothy, emotional pill seldom suffices. That what can hold an alcoholic must have depth and weight. And nothing in God's economy is wasted. And I realize today that, as it says in our promises, our nine-step promises, that no matter how far down the scale that I have gone, I can see how my experience can benefit others. Right? So my active alcoholism doesn't go in vain. In fact, it becomes a weapon in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I get to share with you and sponsees what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Right? And thank God that Bill was able to do that. Right? And I probably shared this in the first week or so, but you know, the hotel lobby. You know, I look at the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we get to sit here 80 plus years later. And how maybe just a few different decisions that Bill would have made might not have had us be here today, right? In the hotel lobby, you know, with the pacing of the hotel lobby, and his business deal was shot, couldn't even pay his hotel tab, and one end was a bar, and the other end was a telephone booth. And imagine what would have happened if Bill went to the bar. I don't know. Was God doing for him what he couldn't do for himself? Mm-hmm. Did he realize that intensive alcoholics, right, work with alcoholics would always work? And what Bill did is he went to the telephone booth and he started going down a ledger and finally found alcoholic number two, our co-founder, Dr. Bob, right? And they got together. And here we are 80 plus years later, right? Because he knew that to ensure his sobriety at 6 months, he had to go and reach out to somebody else. And this is before the big book, right? This is before the 12 steps were even formed. At this point, Dr. Bob, I believe, was using the Oxford Group 6 steps. And so what a miracle, right? What a miracle. And in my 12-step work over the past 9 years, I've witnessed a lot of miracles. And it says, life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Absolutely. Regardless of what's going on outside of AA, I come in here and my contact with all of you and newcomers is the bright spot in my life. And it makes the rest of my life a lot brighter, you know. And you know, I think about, Friday night I was in Summit and I got to celebrate my 9-year anniversary by God's grace and mercy. I had a sponsee there, and I didn't know he was going to be there that night, and I didn't realize he got up before me and was presenting a 2-year medallion to his sponsee. That's how this works, right? So that's the biggest payoff that I'll ever get as a sponsor, is to watch somebody I get to sponsor, I'm privileged to sponsor and walk through this process, help somebody else. And on Friday night, I got to witness a sponsee helping somebody else. And he does it the same way that I did it, right? Through the book, right? And what a gift. And then I got to get my medallion, which was not as important as seeing that moment. And really the only reason why I get up there and do that is so that other people can see that it works. Again, it's a selfless act to show other people that this program works if I'm willing to work it. And I've had my separation from in AA, and I've had such a high spiritual awakening that nobody in AA was doing it right anymore. And spiritual pride, an ego-feeding proposition. And guess what I did? In AA, I drew a line, and I made it us against them. Right? Oh, that meeting. Oh, they're talking about their cat. And this, you know, it's like insanity. Right? And, oh, my God, they're not talking about the big book. There's no solution in this meeting. People are going to get drunk because of this meeting. And you know, all this insanity goes on in my head. And I was at a meeting one night in Edison. And I'd never been there before, so I didn't know that this meeting had a reputation for crosstalk. And here I am in my fancy suit and tie, walking in on my high horse, like I'm going to tell people how this program really works. Before I even got into the meeting, I already had this judgment that I was going to do this. And so I'm sitting in the meeting, and the beginners would share, and it seemed like they were sharing for like 15 to 20 minutes. It probably was only like 2. That's my perception is skewed when I'm stuck in spiritual pride, and that's another self-seeking, self-defeating purpose. So I'm sitting there and I'm listening, and the leader would actually interrupt them in the middle of their share and give them direct advice. And I thought Dr. Phil was going to come out next, and I'm like, what am I in a talk show here? Is this an AA meeting? And I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I've been through the steps. I'm taking inventory so far, right? And not really. I'm taking their inventory, and so I was the last one to share. I made sure that it was that way, right? I was going to wait until the last 5 minutes to raise my hand, and I'm part of my shortcoming is I'm passive aggressive. Right, I come off as a nice guy, but there's some sarcasm deep down, and I said, my name is Eric Vaughn. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I politely picked apart the meeting my passive aggressive manner, and I said, oh, and by the way, if anybody wants to get well, come see me after the meeting. I've never been back to that meeting since. That was a long time ago. Maybe I owe them an amends. And so a guy came up to me, and I think I probably had 2 years at the time. He said, I've been here before. I didn't drink. I went to meetings. I accumulated 4 years. And everybody was telling me I had to do the steps. And I said I wasn't doing the steps. And I went out and I got drunk. And I can't get back. And you said you're doing the steps. And he said, I want to do the steps. So I acquired a sponsee that night through my spiritual pride. And so I was walking this gentleman through the steps, and we used to go to a meeting on Saturday mornings in New Brunswick, Cook College. And a really big meeting, and we used to meet before the meeting, and I would, you know, we would go through the step work. And one odd night, we were at a meeting on a Wednesday night in Middletown, and we drove back, sat at a diner, got something to eat, and at that point I was having him, he had his notebook, and he was writing down his resentments. So I had him, and we were at the diner, writing down his resentments, and comes across a name, he says, Lenny. And underneath his breath, he mumbles my last name. And I said, okay. I said, Lenny Vaughn. All right, why are you mad at Lenny Vaughn? He's a drunk, a bum. He crashes on my couch, borrows money, never pays me back. He's a nuisance. He's annoying. I said, okay. I said, was he adopted by any chance? Yeah. Did he live in Millstone? Yeah. I said, you have a resentment against my father. Well, I haven't seen or heard from him in 29 years. And prior to that conversation, I was praying because my mother didn't know where he was. Nobody knew where my father was. And I was just praying for him and asking God for his peace. And lo and behold, I uncovered the whereabouts of my missing father through a sponsee's resentment list. And, you know, wow. It's funny how nothing in God's economy is wasted. Even my spiritual pride can use everything for my good, although it's not comfortable to be in that position or to be that person in AA, because it's another form of separation, and that's what the human ego wants. The one job the human ego has is to separate me from you and from my relationship with my Creator, to get me back to the bottle. And so I remember we were at a meeting Saturday morning, and my sponsee came up to me and said, look, I'll even show you where he lives. He said, so follow me. And so I followed my sponsee, and he parked the car, and he is apparently living with an elderly lady. And I guess he does side work because he doesn't have a regular job. He does side work for cash. I think he lived rent-free with this elderly lady. And I remember walking up to the door. It was very eerie. And this little old lady was just standing by the door. And I walked up to the door, and she literally opened the door before I had a chance to say anything and said, Eric, your father's been talking an awful lot about you lately. And she invited me in. And he wasn't there. And we sat down for about an hour, and we talked. And I left my cell phone number. And that same day, I got a call from my father. And we haven't skipped down the road of happy destiny. We never rekindled a relationship since that time. He has since disappeared again. My sponsee tells me he sees him every once in a while. And he turned up one night, called me from Turning Point Rehab, asking me for money. I was just about to go into my Monday night Big Book meeting in Hillsborough. And I said, Dad, I don't have money for you. I said, but look, when you get out, we'll grab breakfast. And, you know, you have a grandchild. And, you know, and I, you know, he didn't know that. And obviously he's been MIA. And so we hung up the phone. And about 10 minutes later, I got a text message from a guy in AA who always would book me to different rehabs and detoxes. And that Thursday night, he had a speaking commitment that he wanted me to do in Turning Point. And I got to speak with my father in the audience. And he came up to me after, and a lot of people came up to me after, and they were like so surprised, right? They're like, this is your son? He was just talking about you in group. they're like, God is good. God is good. And I guess in that moment, God used me and my father to give hope to other people in that rehab, even though me and my father have never rekindled our relationship. You know, and then another night I did more 12-step work, my first night watch commitment for intergroup. And if anybody doesn't know what that is that they give you a binder with the list of counties and people who are willing to be 12-step contacts, so to speak. And so The hours are from 6 p.m. It was a Tuesday night. My shift from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. because the intergroup office closes during those hours, and groups take it on for a week, and they take on the hours that the people aren't filling it, right? So that when somebody calls in, they have a live person to talk to. And what a great organization we're in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm. So selfless. That's why it works, and that's why it doesn't die. Because it's a selfless organization, right? And we don't get involved in outside controversy like the Oxford Group and the Washingtonians did, right? So the 800 number gets patched to your cell phone, and I would guess in the beginning of the night, you get calls of people asking for where the meetings are. You ask them where they're located. You go online. I usually have the online set up, and I'll say, oh, Piscataway, here are the meetings in Piscataway, these are the times, and so on and so forth. And then after hours, you get what I call the wet ones calling. And my mother called in drunk on my first night watch commitment asking for help. And she knows I'm in AA, and she quickly realized who she was talking to, and I felt the pain in my mother's voice, and unfortunately, she is still dying from alcoholism as we speak. And I said, Mom, I'm going to have somebody call you. and so a lady that I know from that area who I respect her recovery, I said, look, can you just give my mother a call? She called in tonight. She's in a rough shape, and she needs to talk to somebody. And so she did, and my mother called me back, drunk and belligerent, didn't like that lady. And I said, okay, Ma. I said, there's a meeting on Wednesday night in Manville. She said, would you take me to the meeting, please? I said, absolutely, I'll take you to the meeting. And so Wednesday night came. It's a 7:30 meeting in Manville, and I went to go pick up Mom, and the door was locked, the shades were drawn. She wasn't answering the phone. And I went to the meeting without her, and you know, it's sad what alcoholism can do to a family. I live three blocks away from my mother. She has seen her one grandson maybe twice, and she has yet to meet her new grandson because she's angry. And her and my fiance don't get along, and my mother doesn't have a filter, and that's, you know, that's alcoholism. and it's sad, and I can't get my mother sober. I cannot, and I will not. What I will be or try to be is a good example, you know. And so she knows where to go whenever she's ready to give it up. But it's a hard thing to give up. Fear. I'm afraid. I'm afraid if I give this thing up, if I give alcohol up, what will be left of me? How will I live my life? How can I cope? And until you know, you don't know. And there is a way. And it's here. It's in this book. It's in these steps. It's in this fellowship. It's in the traditions that protect us from ourselves. Because the only way that Alcoholics Anonymous will ever die will be from the inside. When we place personalities over principles, right? Vice versa, what the tradition actually says. And you know, so I am completely grateful to be here. You know, always grateful to share a little bit of me with you guys. I think I'm going to wrap it up there. Thanks for having me out. Mm-hmm.